Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who still only had 3 hours sleep, even though a week has passed. It's Richard Herring! Thank you! Thank you very much. We've actually decided to change the order of these when we put them out, so that won't make any sense. But never mind! Joe Lycett's going out this week. So my Ghislaine Maxwell joke's gone down the toilet. So I'll be doing that next week. Right, hello. We've just started and haven't said anything else. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Though I was talking to Kel from Keenan and Kel the other day. He's going well. He's actually become religious. I don't know if you knew that. I'd look him up to check he was still alive. Because not everyone from the opening titles of Keenan and Kel is still alive. Anyway, he calls it Rahalastapa, so that's good. This is a good subject for this particular show, I realise, because it's about ghosts. And, you know, I've been quite cynical about ghosts over the last 10 years in this podcast, but my daughter... told me that she's 7 years old. Mason in her class told her that he went to a haunted house and he looked in the mirror in the haunted house and then he said, "Blood Mary," 12 times. And then he looked in the mirror and Blood Mary was in the mirror. Then he looked round and she wasn't there. And then every time he looked in the mirror, she was getting a bit closer. And then he looked round, she wasn't there. And then Blood Mary pushed Mason over. So, solved, didn't it? There you go, there are ghosts. There are ghosts. And she terrified her little brother by saying that. We were then playing football on the rec and it got a bit dark and he hid in my coat because he was scared there was a ghost on the rec. I said, "What kind of ghost would be hanging around on the rec?" And, "Oh, yeah, actually, probably good to hide."
But anyway, so Go Surreal, so that's we've sorted that out. There's news on Chortle that Stuart Lee's earliest joke has been discovered. I don't know if you saw this, Stuart. Stuart Lee from Solihull, it's got to be him, appeared on an episode of Tiswas, which is a fantastic show which influenced me very much. This is Stuart Lee's joke from Tiswas. I'll read it to you now. Mr. X was the cross-eyed son of Picasso that does Adamant's makeup, or the real owner of Trevor McDonald's voice, or the irate father of the shoeshine boy whose brush was stolen by Midgeur to use as a moustache. So anyone who thinks that I didn't influence his comedy... I wouldn't open with it, Stu, is what I'm saying, but I hope he makes that the title of his next show, The Hole. That has to be the whole thing. I'm not sure what the joke was, but that's good. It's good. Well done, Stuart. He's doing okay. Right, my guests this week are probably best known as Roland in Bob the Builder and Corporal Matlin from Hellboy. Will you please welcome Matthew Bainton and Jim Howick, ladies and gentlemen. Sit down. Come in, sit down.
Hello.
Good evening.
Fantastic to have you here, gentlemen. A massive fan. Roland, I'm saying it like in a way that most people under 45 won't understand. You were Roland in Bob the Builder.
Yeah, it was horrible. Actually, it's one of the few jobs I've ever done where I ended up saying, I don't want to do this anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Were you bullied by Bob the Builder?
It made you think of the original Bob the Builder as being a really beautiful sort of gift to the world. Ah. It was like the new version that was soulless. And all I remember is being told to do things like bigger. Every take was always like, can you really give it more energy? And so, I hated myself for every single second
of the job.
And then I ended up saying, I don't want to come back anymore. Cheers, everyone.
How many series did you do?
I think I probably only did like two episodes. He was like an occasional character across two or three series.
Did Roland, was he a thing or a person?
He was a person. He had a toy factory.
Okay.
And he struggled at times to get the toys out. And Bob had to come in and help.
Good. I'm glad we've rekindled memories of that for you. It's a great start.
Yeah, thanks.
Jim, Corporal Matlin in Hellboy.
Hellboy.
That's a proper film.
Yeah.
This is. I know for a fact this is darker than what I just said.
That sounds like a dream. Strap in. The biggest thing I've ever done was probably my first job. So I got this part, and it was, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the film, but in the beginning of the film, there's this sort of pre-title sequence where we're in occupied Scotland. And I play this sort of American GI photographer, combat photographer. And it was like a month's night shoot under rain machines, which is insane rain. So I don't know if any of you like have been on a film set or seen these rain machines, but when you see rain on film, it's really pissing it down. Like, real rain doesn't register on a camera. So they're like fire hoses, freezing cold rain all night for a month. And about 3 weeks in, I got sort of quite bad sort of hypothermic symptoms. And I can laugh about it now, but... I sort of passed out. I was sort of coming in and out of consciousness. And I sort of woke up in my trailer and I was being sort of stripped. And then I was sent straight to a sort of an actor clinic a clinic for actors in Prague, and I was had an IV stuffed in my arm, and it was it was horrendous.
How is there a clinic for specifically for actors?
It was like is it for actors who've been rained on a bit too much? Yeah, is that what it was for?
It was for pre-title sequence actors exclusively, and. It was just a posh clinic. It wasn't like A&E. It was like a kind of sort of room, quite a plush room, actually.
Yeah.
And I wasn't on a bed. I was on a desk. No, I was on a bed. And, that's what happened.
Did you appear in the... You're presumably still...
I'm in the film. Yeah. And it was Guillermo del Toro. And I was so green and didn't really know who he was. And he hadn't really done... He'd done some amazing films, but not the films that we know sort of now, or what hadn't won an Oscar or anything like that. So, but he was still a visionary director then.
Yeah.
And what I mean, this can be cut out of the actual podcast, but what did he say when...
He said, every time... So there was a scene in the beginning where I had a sort of hero moment I was really looking forward to, and I had to sort of shoot the bad guy, and you think, oh my God, he's dead, but he's not dead because he comes back later. And I shot him, and it was the first time I'd used a gun on screen. Yeah. And again, guns are like rain machines. They're fucking scary. And they're loud and really powerful.
Yeah.
And so I was firing this gun, and please forgive the accent, but I kind of have to do it like this. Sorry, everyone, if there's any Mexicans here. But he went, Jimmy, you got to... Okay, Jimmy, come up here. I was like, oh my God. What have I done? Dripping wet, freezing. So, Guillermo, is that okay? He went, no, playback. He went, every time you pull the trigger, you look like you're taking a shit. I was like, what? Steamed up glasses. Playback, slow motion. So he played it back slow motion, and it was true. I was like... Like it was bad. So I was fired from the scene.
I was fired from the scene on the spot. Pick the only two jobs that you
know. Yeah. So I
what a start.
That wasn't what I was thinking of,
wasn't it? Oh great! You made me do the racist thing. Cheers.
It was the response to you having hypothermia.
What, you call me a pussy?
Yeah.
Yeah, you call me a pussy. You're just a pussy, man. He's a lovely, lovely man, and he's really fun. And it was banter. I almost died.
It was a different time.
Yeah,
time.
Yeah, it's fine.
Hey, guys, look, I'm a massive fan of Ghosts, but this has been like hopefully not the end point, but the cult that so far... 15 years of working together, right? So did you meet doing Horrible Histories, or did you know each other before? You were all put together, right, as a team?
We knew each other's work. I've seen your work.
I looked up your work. That's true. I looked up his name and found a short film in which you're trying to flush a shit away.
Down the toilet. Didn't take long. We're on to shits. Tokyo Gym.
Yeah, some of us knew each other from the circuit and stuff, and but we were all just cast or offered. I think were you offered?
No, did
you?
I had to audition.
Yeah, I think most of us had to audition. Yeah. I presume.
Yeah.
Don't know, but yeah, we were put together. We were.
Yeah, because I was thinking that often that happens a lot with sketch shows. I know, like Horrible Histories is an interesting example because it's like it was sort of a children's show, but you guys are very much the team, I think, is very much sort of this generation's Monty Python, and I think in terms of that you work together and you do stuff separately and it's all good, and they started, some of them started on a kids' history show as well.
Yes, that's right.
They did Terry Jones and Michael Palin did a kind of complete and utter history of Britain, I think it was called. But I'm always like, when a new sketch show comes on and people go, and we've taken this person and this person, this person, and put them together, you kind of go, that's not going to work. Mm. But this kind of worked. And I was thinking actually On the Hour was the same as well, to be fair. So On the Hour was a team of people who didn't know each other who were put together, and it did work.
I think that's because, but on the hour, and Horrible Histories have like a really clear framework as a show, sort of an identity as a show. Whereas a lot of sketch shows, the identity is just it's these two.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Armstrong and Miller or Mitchell and Webb, there's no overarching.
Lee and Herring.
Lee and Herring.
Yeah. So it just slipped his mind.
Fist of Fun. It was often quoted in my house. Fist of Fun. You can't even drive, for example.
Can't even drive.
Just to prove that's true. But yeah, lots of them, I think, are the identity is just who the performers are. And for that reason, you couldn't just cast people and have it work. But
no.
I think On the Hour and Horrible Histories have that in common. There's a really strong framework and identity. And so you could actually just put a team together and it would hold together.
But it's still pretty unusual. And we were talking backstage about double acts as well and how they don't always survive and people fall out. But for like five, how many is this? Five, six people. For you all to be together and all to be writing stuff together and working together for that long, and that's an incredible, you know, you've obviously clicked and understand each other, but you really seem to have an understanding of each other from all the work you've done. What was the mad? When did you? How quickly did you realize? Because there were other people in Horrible History as well.
This has to end.
Yeah.
So how did you?
We're trying to kill the fucker off.
Yeah.
It was when we were told, I think we were told before the fourth series of Horrible Histories that the plan of the producers at the time, it's since got revived, but the producer's plan was we'll do two more, so we'll finish with the fifth. And we all just kind of said to each other, well, that would be a shame if that's it for us.
Right.
So we started to sort of spend our time in makeup and in the green room and stuff, kind of coming up with an idea for something to carry on playing together, really, just because we enjoyed it. Mm. There was kind of big plan beyond let's just find another job.
But it was one of those shows that translated, as Tiz was, which we were just mentioning, was a show that was ostensibly for kids and made the leap, and actually lots of adults watched it as well. And Horrible Histories, I guess, because, you know, there was a lot of kids' sketch shows around that time that were really strong and had very strong casts of comedians and were sort of funnier than the sketch shows that the adults were doing, I think, in a lot of ways. But there was a lot of strong ideas in there and a lot of great performances in there, wasn't there, in Horrible Histories?
Yeah, there was just so much material, wasn't there? I mean, we did 12 episodes in the space that you would film six sort of standard sitcom series episodes, so there was so much material, and it really kind of promoted a sort of anarchy in the tone, because there was just too much stuff to think about, really.
Yeah,
we couldn't really
it wasn't hone time it. For lots of takes or
yeah
lots
there wasn't
of,
time for yeah. takes. So it, what it did was encourage a sort of a punky vibe, which I think really connected with the kids.
Yeah.
Because it was almost from the sort of perspective of the naughtiest kid in class, the clown of the classroom.
Yeah.
And we were probably all of those. We were those people anyway. So it very quickly sort of, I think towards the end of the first series, when it all got a bit too much and we were sort of demanding less sketches, please, because we couldn't learn it in time, that we just sort of, we didn't sort of so much go, well, fuck it, this is it, you know, we'll just do it like this. But we just didn't have time to apply ourselves, I think, that we would do normally to other jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a funny sort of way of saying we were stopped caring.
Yeah. But we never stopped caring.
But you kind of, we were all relatively young and didn't have a ton of stuff on the CV. And so you kind of go into any job like hungry to prove that you can do a really good job and be really good and show your range and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And as Jim said, that quite quickly went out the window in favour of just, can I make that person corpse?
Yeah. That came into it too, yeah.
But that's seemed like, you know, it seemed like you were having fun.
Yeah, loads of fun. And we were running out of, the truth is that we had to do that to try and kind of keep ourselves motivated. Yeah. Like we... we run out of voices, we run out of accents, we you know.
Yeah, we all burned through the range that we had in the first 2 weeks. Sort of got, I've done my 10 voices. I've done them all now.
So, like, Matt would come onto the makeup truck. He'd been sort of asked to travel to set, and he'd come on the makeup truck and go, what should this guy sound like? You know, and we, you know.
We were kind of asking each other for dares, really.
Yeah.
which sounds self-indulgent, because it is. But somehow it, you know, I think as long as you somehow include the audience on that feeling of misbehaviour.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel, you know, sometimes when a kids show sort of makes that leap across the bounds, you feel the cast are like giving a little wink and a nod to the adults. And it never really, you know, it never felt like you were pushing that too far. It still felt like you were doing the job.
Yeah, we never stopped caring. It was always a labour of love, Broadway Histories, absolutely. We never stopped caring about the show. We loved the show. And we're still really proud of it. But it was just such hard work. But I think that kind of bonded us as a group, though, as well. I think had we not met on that group, then we probably wouldn't be working with each other today. Because it was so hard.
Yeah.
It was such a tough gig.
And so you was Yonderland the neck, the project that you did after that together? Yeah. So with that, and that was all of your own idea. So you'd started that and based it around what you obviously presumably knew you could do and wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's great that, I mean, again, the characterization of each of you in a broad sense, even though you play lots of roles in all of those things, you fit a certain, you know, there's certain parts that it's obvious someone's going to do, you know, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Like subordinate. Half man, half potato. I'm your man. Look no further. Others can try. But you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, leapfrogging to ghosts for a sec, that was, I think the characters we had there were the sort of, we'd auditioned for those parts over the course of Horrible Histories and Yonderland, like we knew what our strengths were. And the truth is we could probably all play all of those parts in Ghosts. But, you know, it's... Do you not agree?
Don't worry, there's a new...
Is this the beginning of the end?
There's a new terrible thing that started up that's going to destroy the podcast, don't worry. And it won't make any sense. Oh, no, it will make sense, that's fine, but it'll be sort of weird... Why is that that thing from 8 weeks ago suddenly come back? So don't do it again. Or you'll be in trouble. I knew it had to end one day. It had to end one day. I've done nearly 11 years of this nonsense. Tell us a bit about Yonderland, because I don't know if everyone saw that as much, because it was on Sky.
Yeah.
It's always like a little bit of a... And I'd sort of caught little bits of it. I watched more of it today, and it's a very imaginative and wide-ranging thing. And there's... You've got... Is it actually Jim Henson...
Yeah.
It wasn't the Jim Henson company. But people that had worked on all of stuff. Baker Coogan,
yeah. John Schooner Adden.
And yeah, I mean, so the puppeteers that were involved in the show would be sort of stood around on set going, oh yeah, the last time I was here, we were doing Yoda and Empire Strike, and we'd be going, tell me crazy. More about that, please.
Elstree's kind of weird because, like, we filmed Yonderland. They've made the most amazing films and all of the films from our childhood.
Yeah.
And all there is, certainly when we filmed there, that might be different now, is just a sort of laminate piece of A4 paper just saying, Dagobah. You know, the Cantina Band, Obi-Wan's gaff. You know, it's mad that these sets were where we are dicking about. We thought about that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the idea with Yonderland really was just... we didn't want to do a sketch show because we didn't feel like we could live up to Horrible Histories.
Yeah. Mm.
But we did want to be selfish enough to play all of the parts. So we sort of thought, well, we can't touch history. What else could we come up with? And fantasy very quickly was the clear sort of thing. And we thought, well, we can play all the parts and we can have puppets and do their voices too.
Yeah.
So it was just greed, really.
And it's sort of labyrinth cross with 100%. I mean, it's everything's quite Python-esque. I think that you're doing, but I mean that in a complimentary way as well, because I think you're very much doing your own thing. But it's because of the costumes, because of the silliness.
100%. We weren't hiding.
No, but it's interesting to bring Labyrinth and that together. I suppose Labyrinth had an element of that in itself as well. But
Terry Jones' script, wasn't it? Labyrinth, and I mean, we were just ripping it off.
And the storyteller as well, the storyteller.
Talked about Kroll as well.
Kroll, yeah.
All that stuff.
We just love all that stuff. And there's something sort of, there's something just very funny about it as well, I think. Ah, you seek the golden pretzel. You know, it's just, it's funny. And we all kind of tick bucket lists there a little bit. Like, I've always wanted to play a crone. it was really fun. It was mad, really.
Yeah, I remember we did actually take it to the BBC, and I can't remember what the exact response was, but the vibe we got was it's a bit strange for a mainstream audience. And I remember at the time thinking, what? Mad? This is just a really fun family sitcom. Yeah. And now I look at bits of it and I go, it's fucking mad. It's absolutely mental.
But I think that would, I think it would work as a... Yeah. I mean, that's what the genius of what you're doing.
It did work as a family thing.
But the genius of what you're doing, I think, is that it is... All of these things, you can sit down with all of the family and watch it, right? So there's in Ghosts, there's the occasional tiny little nod towards a slightly cheeky joke, but that is in such a way that it would bypass anyone who didn't understand what the joke was, so it's absolutely fine. But it's in a way, I think a lot of comedians wouldn't be going for that audience, and would want to be the edgy thing or the late night thing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, but it's the golden ticket, isn't it, in terms of TV, to find something that everyone will enjoy that is also good and isn't just an archetypal sitcom.
That's what we aspired to, certainly with Ghosts, was like, can you make a mainstream sitcom that isn't shit?
Yeah. And do you think you've done it?
It's not for us, But the weird thing is, like, we, as you say, we were cast in Horrible Histories. I think I've been on the record a lot saying, I've made no secret of the fact that when it first came to me, I was like, I don't want to do kids' TV.
Right.
And my agent said, well, look at the scripts because they're quite funny. And I read them and was like, oh, they are quite funny. All right, okay, I'll go for the audition. And she said, it's only on CBBC. No one will ever notice. and then it becomes this defining thing, And so we didn't go into our careers or our sort of existence as a group with a kind of background in family entertainment or a desire to be a mainstream, mainstream comedians. We'd all just done Edinburgh Fringe shows and we were all students of comedy in the same way that everyone who goes through Edinburgh is, But that was the audience we had, and we'd have been stupid after that to kind of try and shrug them off and go like, well, our next move should be some edgy thing, why? It was fun what we did, so
we stuck Ghosts with it as well. I mean, it's not edgy in terms of it's not swearing and people killing, and well, so the people are killing people,
big time,
having sex with each other too much.
They only have sex with decapitated people.
But it's about, it's about death, and it's deeply about death, because I don't know how much you thought of that beforehand and how much that kind of came about as you were writing it, but you've got to look at the lives of the people and the deaths of the people and what death means and what eternity means and to confront a family audience with that.
Yeah.
For young people, that's going to be the first time that they're really wrestling with those subjects.
Yeah. And that's where you start to sort of get your kicks as writers and creators, that you start to realise that these things are sort of can be a Trojan horse. As long as you're delivering the kind of the accessible family entertainment that people are tuning in for, you can try and smuggle some other stuff in there. And sometimes that's like, for us, we love putting surreal textures and moments into the comedy of the show, where you think, if the whole thing were that, it just wouldn't, we wouldn't get away with it, but we can get away with moments. And then, yeah, with ghosts in particular, very early on, I remember thinking, the ghosts are actually a metaphor for just being alive.
Yeah.
You're stuck there. You don't know why or whether there's any reason to when you move on.
Yeah.
You don't know if there's a God. You don't know what you're meant to fill your days with. How do you find purpose or happiness?
Well, and all you
could have.
It's fascinating.
You said don't lie, sit, cry.
I said I wouldn't cry. But, you know, also.
And that's, that I find really, really. I got very, very excited.
Yeah.
And sort of began to realise we could actually kind of do something quite Beckettian in its own way. Yeah. And it's the smallest sort of flavour of that, but it's in there. And it's in there for a family audience.
Like the first scene in the whole show is like we're establishing a sort of morsel concept, right? So we knew that, and the audience knew straight away that we could go at any time.
Yeah.
That's what we're discussing. You can go at any time and you don't know how and you don't know when, and maybe she went because of this and maybe she'll come back, or, you know, it's that not knowing. But for me, it wasn't until we did the episode where my character Pat's family comes back to visit him, and we had the moment with the grandchild, and Charlotte came back and said, you know, they've called it Pat. And that actually, filming that outside really hit me, you know, that moment that we were, that this is actually incredibly sad. And I hope it's going to be okay. Because this was still the first series, and we really didn't know if people would react kindly to the show. That was a big moment for me.
But it's fascinating as well that all the characters that, you know, the other characters have been spying on their lives as well. So they, when they were alive, the other characters saw everything in their life.
Yeah.
And then you become part of the group yourself, and those people know everything about, more than you know about yourself, because you the other characters have seen everything.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the ghosts are visiting the house at the time. Yeah. So Thomas doesn't live there, and Julian is there for a function thing. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you do get a bit of that, and we have been careful to sort of plot out who was around and who saw what of that moment. And I think there's only really Lady B and Kitty that lived there.
Yeah,
and Robin, but no one else was around. I think that's about it. I think that's it. But yeah, it's fun.
It is fun. It's fun. Well, I've got some emergency questions about ghosts.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, as experts on ghosts. I mean, the one that I would usually ask, I suspect, is the first question that everyone asks you in any interview. So I might not ask. I'll ask it, but you don't have to answer it.
No.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Okay. No, sir.
Good. We got out of the way. They don't exist. Your whole sitcom is a waste
Larry
of time.
Larry did a ghost podcast a few weeks ago, and he summed it up really well, that none of us in the group really believe in ghosts, but in the hotel we stay in Guildford, one of the rooms is purportedly haunted, and everyone's really uncomfortable about staying in it.
Yeah.
So maybe we do.
Yeah, I think you do. But I when I first walk my dog, I live in the village now. When I first walk my dog at night time along, a sort of bridle way, there was no one around. I shone my torch, and I was pretty sure I saw, like, in the distance, a mum and
a horseman,
a mum walking along with two kids, and maybe where it was just a flashing thing. Maybe I've created this afterwards. Slightly out of date clothing. But only a little bit.
Yeah.
Then I shone my torch back again, and there was nobody there.
Oh.
Now, it's possible they just turned around and legged it out the bridle, but it was a straight bar.
Come on, we're going.
Or it's possible.
Mummy, why is that man shining a torch?
Yeah, it could be that, and they could have been weirded out by the torch. But last night I went out for that, it was really misty, and I was going back to the same place, and I thought, oh, just let the dog do a wee here. And the dog also really wanted to go back home again. So, Yeah, you know, doctor, you never, know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, more importantly, let's get on to the proper ghost questions that you will have thought about. The other day, well, a couple of months ago, my son woke me up at 6 o'clock in the morning and said, "Daddy, do ghosts have bum holes?" What do you think?
Ours do. It's been referred to in the show now that they do go to the toilet, but it turns to dust.
Okay.
They get the urge.
I'll let him know.
Yeah.
The same would apply to ejaculate.
Okay. That's true when you're alive, though. When you get to my age.
Next time you're dusting the shelves.
It's turned to dust.
Naughty ghosts.
It's turned to dust.
Good. Well, I disagree with you. I don't think they do have bum holes. Is it cheating to have sex with a ghost? Now, I know you. It's difficult, but it's possible Julian could finger someone.
Julian could finger someone. That's true.
It is possible. So would
and
it be
I wouldn't put it past him to try.
I'm surprised he hasn't spent more time trying to do that.
That's a good point. You've really found a hole there.
Oh.
God, that's awful. So sorry. But it works.
Yeah.
He would do that, wouldn't he? Oh.
Is it cheating?
Is it cheating if you're in a relationship and...
How do you think about the ghost?
You're the living person.
You're a living person. The ghost comes along and says, "I want to suck you off." And you go, "Well, you're not a real person. You're probably imaginary. Go ahead."
I'd feel guilty.
Would you?
I'm pathetic, though.
They're real to you. It is cheating.
It is cheating, I think.
I think it is.
They're dead, though. If you had sex with a dead body, no one would say you were cheating.
No, but
it's not cheating.
Whether or not you're cheating is
in the dock,
main issue
cheating.
There.
Send him down.
He was having an affair with a dead. I don't think you could call it an affair.
Oh, God. Well, you know, it's a great series. I mean, I'm sure everyone has seen all of it. And I love that. I mean, that's what I've always thought about the afterlife. Well, I've kind of wanted to write about afterlives in a different way. And the amazing thing about this as well is it's, you know, there must have been 100 sitcoms pitched about ghosts, right? There was Rent-A-Ghost. There's a few that have been made.
Yeah.
But to get it so right, I think, is a real... Because it'd be so easy to get it wrong. It'd be so easy to go, "Let's do ghosts." Oh, that's stupid. We can't think of anything. So it's really well thought out. And I like the idea of you not finding out anything. You die, you expect, oh, now we'll find out what life is about, and then not to find out what life is about, have to have no idea. And to know that, yeah, that whole thing of, I mean, without giving too many spoilers away, in the latest series, one of the main characters leaves to go to wherever they go.
Yeah,
and that's a bold thing in itself. So, you know, that's such a weird and wonderful philosophical thing to think about being trapped in eternity and the caveman having been there for presumably 10,000 years. And
I was thinking about this the other day. I think it's part also that we would never have written this. Like, this couldn't have been when we were approaching Yonderland. It's partly a very midlife thing to write.
Yeah.
Because not just the fact it's about death or looking, you know, starting to see your mortality ahead of you, but also because you become really nostalgic about the life that you've lived. Yeah. You're sort of looking back as much as you're looking forward. And that is a major theme of Ghosts, is these people looking back over their lives and asking themselves, what defined my life and what, you know, when was I happiest, or what am I still holding on to that I ought to let go of and stuff like that. So we couldn't have written it in our 20s, I don't think. It's really pathetic, aged subject.
It's true.
And
it's
true.
It's funny, I think it's something very human that we probably haven't talked about, I don't think, as a group, but the idea of sort of wanting to live forever is, there's a kernel of attraction there for everyone, I think. It's like, I don't know if I would like to, because, you know, you're going to see everyone die and everything, but you could have, like, roast dinners every Sunday forever. Go to Alton Towers forever.
Yeah.
And fuck them. Fuck all the my family and friends. And pets and stuff. But I think most people would say no. And this is a little sort of offering of the existence that would give you.
Yeah. Although they do very well at not being weighed down by it, because I think
that's true.
If it wasn't a comedy, if you wanted to write this as, you know, you would actually be in utter hell of being with the same.
And we've not made it sound much like a comedy. But it is one.
It's so bleak. Really,
but it's true. If you lived forever, it's death that defines life, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, and also
the old ticking clock.
They all basically. I think they pretty much all, you know, have a truncated life, or like at least it didn't go how they wanted it to go. Yeah. You know, or that, you know, it's that idea that when you die. In the drama gives you the idea that you live your life and everything is, and you have your success, and then it dies in a nice neat bow. But you actually, most of you have just died in some random fashion, like being shot through the neck, and life is curtailed, you know, and you don't get to wrap everything up.
Yeah,
it's horrible. It's what a horrible,
horrible show.
What have we done?
I'm not going to watch that again.
I'm not going to make any more of that.
Yeah, let's not make any more.
I'm glad. My mission is just to destroy all art.
Trash it.
Because I can't think of anything anymore, so why should you? From a practical point of view, with it, because you write in teams, right? And do the teams stay together, or do you mix
and
match?
So we plot the story as a group, as a six, and then we go away in pairs, and Matt and I are a pair, and Larry and Ben are a pair. And Larry writes with Martha sometimes. So it
changes a little bit as well. We mix it up a bit, but
And then, you know, you're obviously all sympathetically aligned enough that it works that way, and you come back and chuck in ideas, I guess.
That's it. We went through some really hard times and horrible histories. Like, there were genuinely moments of sort of near breakdown moments where we were so tired and uncomfortable. A lot of the time, and you learn a lot about each other, I think, in those moments. It's not coming. I can't. I'm trying.
And this is again unusual, maybe pretty unusual for a UK sitcom, but it's sort of the dream as well, is that it's gone to America and it's doing well in America, right? With the American actors, doing their own version of it. So that's pretty good news for you guys financially, I'm thinking.
How much good as you might think.
From this, there's too many of you,
there's
right?
There's six of us. And we've all got agents. And, I mean, hey, it's great.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's great.
And how much control do you have over the... Is the American version sort of the same scripts, or are they doing their own thing with it?
It sort of began on the same tracks and then becomes more its own thing. Yeah. And it always felt... As soon as the possibility of it being remade came up, it was instantly pretty obvious that, oh, yeah, that could really work, because our version is so much about you... the history of Britain, you know, and the archetypes of our own culture and history. And if you're going to remake a show in a different place, then it ought to be one that is going to be different because of the place.
Yeah.
And so they get to play with American history. And so it becomes, you know, it becomes much more its own thing quite quickly.
We had a fair bit of input at the beginning of the process before they actually started making the series. And I mean, before they made the pilot, we had conversations about what we think the ghost should be and what ones you should include. And they didn't listen to us. And they made their own show. No, they did. They did. And you know, the two Joes, who are the showrunners on the show, they've been great. And they've made a really great show, and it's going really well.
But the thing I worry about, and I think about, because I would like this show to go on forever, but you can't age. So there's gonna come a point.
Well, it's all right for Martha because she's sort of playing. She's playing someone in her sort of 60s.
I'm the real problem here.
He's a problem.
Because I cast myself younger than I was anyway.
Much younger.
You're very handsome man. I wouldn't usually say
he is, isn't he?
I'm not saying I'm not handsome.
Yeah, but you're still
just saying,
very youthful. I think you can pass for 23.
Yeah,
you're very boyish.
Is he 23?
He's thereabouts. He's like 27, isn't he? He's a bit older than
that. That's fine then.
Yeah, you're right. I'm my age now.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm a bit older than Pat now. I'm about 2 years older than Pat, yeah. Simon is about...
Are we going to go do everyone?
Should we do everyone?
You can't do it for more than another 10 series.
No.
I think you've got 10 more years.
Okay.
To make them
Can
good.
You imagine how shit it would be?
Oh, my God.
It would be awful.
I'd like to see it with you all trying to look the same, like you've all put on weight.
Yeah. And the like, just melting.
Yeah.
Like Donald Trump playing Pat.
But actually, the new technology, they could do it, can't they?
They'll do it like they did The Irishman.
Yeah.
Is that the...
Yeah,
they can just...
So we'll just sound older.
Yeah.
Younger faces.
You can just film it through an app. Film it through an app, baby app. Watch that, right? Series 10 of Ghosts through an app, baby app.
Were you going to have like a child character? Was that initially one of the
ideas
that you
had?
Yeah,
that
like
was
a
one
child,
of the early ideas.
Which again, that you could.
Well, we had a child. Yeah. We had like a playgirl character.
Yeah, she's not.
But then we had an idea which is like a child being the wisest character in the show, and she lives or he lives at the top of the tower.
That they would be. The oldest in terms of they've been around the longest.
Yeah.
But yeah, like an oracle, you could cast a child and they bloody grow up.
They grow up.
Would you consider casting a real ghost in it? So like if I'd quite... Would you... If someone was so committed...
Go on.
...that I'd like to be in it and I'm prepared to die and come back as a ghost, to actually be a ghost.
Yeah.
The ghost of Richard Herring. Yeah.
Well, oh no, the ghost me could play. I don't have to just play me. I play, but the ghost me would play a character.
Yeah,
it could be me. That would be easier.
Who would you want to play from history?
We'd have to be. Could you? You couldn't really have someone coming in from the past. That would have to be a modern day person dying to be a new ghost, wouldn't it? For the logic of the, or could they have just been in a different room?
This?
So it would have to be someone dying
sort
now.
Sort of like, you know, been in a place where we haven't seen you yet.
Yeah.
We just haven't spotted
just find a new house and go, hello, I've been here for 500 years.
Yeah.
Wait for someone to open a door, even though I'm a fucking ghost.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to start. People go, oh, this is a new direction for ghosts. I'll be a very sweary, You want a poltergeist, a slightly rapey poltergeist.
Yeah.
Just come in and really ruin the whole vibe. Would you be up for that?
The vibe.
I'd be prepared to die to play the part.
Well, die.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk.
Come back to us.
It's commitment, though, isn't it? It's good commitment. Hey, look, I also think I think the film Bill is fantastic, and I don't think gets the credit it deserves.
Thank
I think
you.
It's
thank you.
It does from those young ladies.
Everyone
excited
else,
young ladies.
There's a film called Bill. Even when it was in the cinemas, people didn't know it.
It's about the police. I'm Tosh, obviously.
That is a generational joke.
It
really is.
It is. It is. It's a lovely film, though. So it's about William
Thank
Shakespeare.
You.
You're William yeah. Shakespeare.
Mm.
And, you know, it's sort of very much in the mould of Horrible Histories again, but like a full thing. Is it?
Yeah.
Do you think all the do you think these things have this? Has the success of Ghosts meant people, the BBC might go, oh, can we do Yonderland? Or, you know, we'd let's do more with some of these old ideas? Or is it. Or are those? Oh, are you just going to move away from the?
I don't know what will be next. We've got some ideas.
Yeah.
Hopefully the fact that Ghost is doing well would mean people are receptive to those ideas.
Yeah.
Bill was a sort of a bit of a heartbreaking thing, really, because it got. This is really boring businessy talk.
Yeah, it's all right, we can do that.
The distributor.
As long as you cry.
Okay. The distributor who came on board with the film, I think, with this like big marketing spend promise, they were a German company and they released two UK films and Bill was going to be the third. And the previous two flopped.
Right.
And so they just left the UK market. They just went, oh, we made a mistake, and literally like left an empty office.
Right.
And so Bill, having been made, then didn't have a distributor for
right.
the cinemas. So another distributor picked it up for not very much and then literally didn't print a poster
right.
in the whole country. And released it in September, I think, when kids had gone back to school, and only in daytime screenings when they couldn't go to see the film that they didn't know existed because there wasn't a poster yeah. to tell them existed.
Was it and, Elon Musk who'd taken over this?
Yes. And surprisingly enough, it didn't make its money back, but it
right.
got wonderful review, unexpectedly for us, wonderful reviews, because we thought, you know, film people would be snobby about it, but they were lovely. But then it became, you know, we couldn't sort of do another film because we didn't make money on the film we'd
right.
done. And so that is a long way of saying, hopefully Ghosts means someone somewhere would go, maybe if we made a film with them, it would make its money back.
Yeah.
So can we make a film, please?
I think, but it feels like you should. You know, it is great to have that team. And like I say, I think it does, you know, it just does feel like that Monty Python thing that you can take a different era, you can jump into something else. I mean, obviously, Simon's written Paddington.
Yeah.
Which has got to, that's got to be helpful as well, unless he just says, I'm going to go off and write Paddington's on my own now.
Yeah. He's also just written Wonka.
Oh, has he?
Which I'm in.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And
I was off at the park. I couldn't do it. I was doing something else.
And a young whippersnapper called Timothy Chalamet playing Willy Wonka.
Yes.
And I think that might do quite well. So as long That's as great. Simon is willing to stay in the gang,
yeah,
then, you know, yeah. there's hope for us yet.
Well, I'd love to see more stuff. Look, there's a lot to talk to you guys about, apart from these wonderful shows you've done together, but there are some other things you have done together. You're both in Peep Show,
yep,
which must have been a fantastic job to get, and again fairly early on, but both playing quite significant roles in Peep Show.
Yeah. You got killed, didn't you?
Got killed
that was,
off.
That was pretty brave.
Cheers.
For the writers, not for you.
Oh. Yeah. It was hard to take. I was in Chipotle in Charing Cross Road, and I cried. I genuinely was quite upset. It was the only job that I've ever got where it was my favourite show. I was given a part in my favourite show.
Yeah.
And yeah, I loved it. I loved being involved in it, and yeah, it was just great. I used to watch it when I was a student, the first couple of series.
Right.
Yeah, it's really chuffed to be involved in it for 4 years, and yeah. You know, the abuse I get now on the tube is totally worth it.
Do people say, "Where's the tube?"
Yeah. Tube up your nose.
They just say, "We're on the tube."
No, they never, they don't sort of use the tube as a kind of, like, you know.
They're never clever enough.
Okay.
Yeah, the Peep Show fans are pretty brave, pretty culty people.
Yeah.
Pretty, you know, hardcore. So, yeah. But, yeah, loved it. Loved it.
Me too.
Yeah. And, Matt, you've lived the dream for me. This is what I hope will one day happen to me, though it seems unlikely as I get very few acting jobs. Death in Paradise. You can retire now, right? That's the dream. That's every actor's dream.
Is
death,
it?
Death in Paradise. I'm quite obsessed with Death in Paradise.
Are you?
You were a big role in Death in Paradise, right?
Yeah. You remember when I said about my agent saying no one will watch it?
Yeah.
About, I kind of thought no one had noticed that. It's really hard to say no to that show.
It is.
You go to Guadeloupe. And it's lovely there.
Yeah. And you don't have to stay there forever because you're not the main character. Yeah, you just get killed or whatever, kill someone.
It was really nice.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It's quite formulaic, isn't it? There's a formula. I reckon I could write one of those. If you know them, get in touch. Tell them to get in touch. You played the Witch of Wookiee Hole.
Oh. I forgot about that. Richard E. Grant was in that sketch.
No.
Oh, yeah, I've just remembered that. He seems so nice.
He everyone else says he's lovely. Yeah. Just doesn't like me.
Really sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
Anyway, I was thrilled that I was in...
Richard E. Grant was on the...
He
did the podcast and then wouldn't let us put it out. Now you've brought him up, I'm worried they won't let... You put this one out, it doesn't matter as much if you two say you won't do it. But it does to me.
Sure.
Go on. it's for reasons like that that Richard D. Grant didn't want to put it out. Matt, I want to ask you, why do you only spell your... first name with one T. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing that up.
Okay.
It's my opportunity to pass the question on to my dad, who claimed most of my life that the reason he spelt it with one T on the birth certificate was so that I would be different from other Matthews. And I bought that until I was probably in my 20s when it occurred to me, if you didn't want me to be like other Matthews, you could have called me a different name. It doesn't stand up. I think he spelt it wrong. And he tried to justify it.
He's an Alan with two L's as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
He's an Alan with two L's.
Fuck, you're right. He was passing on the baggage.
It's character building, Matthew. That's what it is.
The weird thing is I've got two older brothers and he didn't do it to them. He waited for his third and went, right, now, fuck it. You're going to suffer like I have.
You will be special,
you're going to spell
child.
This wrong all your life.
You're not tempted just to put another T in there?
Everyone else does it for me. Weirdly, there's lots of one T Matthews, actually.
Are there?
I've met loads now. Matt Horn.
Is he a 1T?
1T.
Wow.
A printmaker called Matt Pringle. Knock it. Look up his website. Bloody good prints.
When you can start listing them all, there's not that many, though, is there? If you can start... I'm going to tell you all of them now.
Well, wait, let me finish. Someone I worked in a call centre with. In Southend-on-Sea, the Royal Bank of Scotland credit card centre. So three.
Good.
And me is four.
It's good. Matt Osman from the Richard Osman's family. Matt, but is he a Matthew?
Is that one T?
One T.
Sells so Matt with one T.
Five.
Yeah.
Anyone else? I think we could hit double.
I mean, there'll be a lot of them in here because they'll have been drawn to you.
Yeah.
That's.
Any Jims in the audience?
With two M's.
That's called Neil. One L.
And people, Jim, people will know you from the Burger King ad you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get that right?
And a Pizza Hut.
And Pizza Hut. I did them all. I did two. Burger King and Pizza. Yeah, Burger King was big Texan burger, onion rings, barbecue sauce, one patty.
Is this your script, or you're just describing what you were advertising?
This is the burger. My script. I didn't have any lines. I've got to build my part.
What did you do? Just eat the burger?
No, I served it up, and I think it's on YouTube.
Great.
If you really want to watch it. But and then I did a Pizza Hut advert with, and I was dressed as an enormous bird, with Jim Field Smith, who's now a sort of big director and was an actor, was sort of an actor with us. But yeah, so yeah, that's that.
What else?
I really like Stag. I thought you were both in Stag, but were you?
I thought it was Jim Field Smith directed
that. Yeah, Jim directed that.
Yeah.
And wrote it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That no, was, I wasn't in Stag.
You in it? I really love that show. But I think you're so ubiquitous, both of you, really.
Oh.
That you can imagine you in.
I could just pretend I was in Stag.
You would just say you were in it. Yeah. You just got killed near the beginning.
Yeah.
Tim Key got killed quite near the beginning.
Tim Key got killed
very
first.
Early day. Yeah. That's the ideal.
Oh, shit. That's a massive spoiler. Sorry.
I think it's been out long enough now.
Yeah, is it? I don't have many. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It's good. It's very good.
Thank you.
I mean, both of you have, you know, done. I'm just trying to look for something rubbish. No, your voice, all good. It's all good. Sex Education, very good. Yeah. Here We Go, very good.
Thank you.
Alison Steadman played my mum in my radio sitcom.
Oh.
It's sadly, the fourth series that was also set in lockdown. So it's kind of you. Alison Steadman. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's a dream.
Yeah.
It genuinely is an honour.
Yeah.
To have her as my mum, Candice Marie. You know, I was obsessed with Nuts in May when I was a kid. So, yeah, she's just such a lovely, kind person. It's really lovely.
Yeah. She is. She's good. We should get her on here. Should have her
You
on.
Should.
Should get her on here. Right, I'm going to ask you some emergency questions. It's really, really interesting to talk to you guys. And I have to say, Ghosts is just so fantastic. So,
thank you. Thank
congratulations
you.
To the entire team. Thank well you. Done.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. If you could go into a chrysalis, dissolve, and come out as anything, what would you come out of the chrysalis as? You know, caterpillars? They go into a chrysalis and they dissolve and turn into butterflies.
I got the concept. Just if it feels...
You can come out as anything you like.
Just an athletic man. Just save me the gym membership.
Yeah.
And, yeah, an absolute goddess. A goddess? Yeah. An absolute god.
It's a very good... you get to the centre of people with this question. So you would be a Greek goddess.
I'd be a Greek goddess.
Yeah.
Oh, something completely carefree.
Wow.
A bird. A beautiful bird.
I should become a therapist because that is just both of your concerns.
Yeah,
something with
physical
handling.
Concerns.
I've got so many
a
cares.
A beautiful bird that's easy to spell.
Yeah. Tit.
I'm already one of those, mate.
Walked into that one. I just want to be able to run.
Good. Do you guys think your obituary photo has already been taken? And if so, what do you think it is?
I don't know. It'll probably be Pat on it. I don't know.
I think at the moment it would be. It's just a question of whether you think you're going to do anything else in your career that will surpass Ghost. It was quite a bold. It's a very understated joke. The Pat Butcher joke.
I really hope
isn't it?
It's my spotlight photo. I really hope it's my acting sort of 10x8.
10x8 spotlight photo.
Really hope it is that. I don't know. No, yeah, there's nothing cool. There's nothing. I'm trying to think if I've got like a bird of prey one or my arm or something cool.
I mean,
I'll tell you what made me think of that.
Your mind is gone.
What made me think of that? I'm thinking out loud, peeps. Pat, so we've got an obituary of Pat on Ghosts.
Okay.
It's rarely seen. It's only when Mike opens the cupboard in Ghosts, he's got a little sort of chart of who, of what
there's
people.
It's like a local paper
obituary. There's the local obituary, local paper obituary, and it's Pat with a sort of hawk on his arm. We had to go and like take the picture in between scenes.
And you saw that in the art had produced that and went, cool.
Yeah, I mean, that is the fucking cool obituary.
That's actually cooler than I am.
That's exactly why I thought of it out loud.
It's going to be good when you guys die, though, isn't it? It's going to be funny.
We talk about it often. The running joke has been that, you know, whoever has if any of us die prematurely in some sort of sudden way, the running joke amongst us is, have we done enough for the headline not to be children's entertainer,
niche actor,
horrible histories star, and then a picture of me dressed as Charles II. Like, have we done enough to just have a little bit more respect on our name, however hard it is to remember how to spell it?
I think it will be Ghost Becomes a Ghost. That'll be the headline.
Yeah, that's, it will that's totally be that.
I mean, that's horrible too, but I'll take it.
Yeah. Good. Thought it was something else then and it's gone. So, you know, don't mind. That's what happens. This is a good question to end on. It really isn't. What's the worst cheese?
What's the worst?
What's the worst cheese that you'd still be prepared to eat? It turns out it's a brilliant question. I'm not going to end. What's the worst cheese you'd still be prepared to eat, Matt?
I'm vegan these days.
Yeah, well, there's so, vegan cheese.
Yeah, and that is bad. So pretty much any of those are bad.
That's cool.
I'm not prepared to eat most of them.
No.
But
they are pretty bad.
There's one I do buy that's got a sort of smoked chili flavour. Mmm.
Are you a cheese fan, Jim?
Love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a cheese connoisseur, but I fucking love a Plowman's, mate.
Yeah. Cheddar or Stilton?
Cheddar.
Yeah, good. But yeah, he chose, cheddar, like, you chose the Witch of Wookiee Hole, and he's chosen cheddar cheese.
Yeah, cheddar cheese, mate. Cheddar cheese. Hate Edam. Don't like Edam at all. Just don't see the fascination. There isn't a fascination. I don't see the point of Edam cheese.
It's got wax on the outside.
It's just awful. I suppose I'd eat it. I mean, what's the? Are we like a knife? Why do we have to eat this cheese?
Have you tried an Edam cheese toastie?
No.
Give it a go.
Okay.
My daughter does this thing with
bit of Branston
Pickle
on the
bells.
Top.
Is that similar Baby Bell?
Yes.
Yeah, no, Baby Bell is like a gouda. It's got like a gouda in the same shape. It's not the same.
It's got red stuff.
Creamier.
Around it.
It's milkier. It's not as hard. It's more flavoursome.
Is it?
Yeah. Put it on a, it's great. Baby Bell's lovely.
Oh, so you like Baby Bell, but you don't like Edam?
Yeah, because they're different cheeses.
Would you eat a cheese string? If I got a cheese string out here now for you, would you eat it?
Yeah. I'm a celebrity. The cheeses. Is it alive?
Imagine if that was I'm a celebrity.
As a cheese boy. You'd luck out, wouldn't you? You'd be like, fucking hell. You'd have to go back to the camp and say, we had 10 different cheeses. No one would believe you. Bollocks. No, you didn't.
They should definitely do that. It'd be awesome.
No matter how fervently you insist, they'd be like, nah, you didn't, mate.
So, fellas, look, we're going to have to wrap up in a second. What's going on in the future? There's a Christmas Ghost, right?
There is, yeah. Mm. We're still not completely sure of when, but it'll be...
probably Christmas.
Sort of three main days of Christmas at some point.
Great.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming they're going to let you do some more if you want to do some more after this. I will make that assumption for you. In case you're not allowed to say.
Beavering away.
It would be odd if they didn't. So yeah.
It would. It would be fucking outrageous.
Are you going to kill any of the living characters and turn them into ghosts?
We might.
Yeah. That's what he does every day in makeup. And Charlotte and Kyle.
FaceTime everyone,
in.
Guys.
And, you know, none of your parts are safe. That's the thing.
That's it, yeah. No. Totally.
Yeah, none of your
and
parts
now we
are
know
safe.
That.
Yeah.
So it's actually it's actually been quite fun introducing that into the show and that sort of danger, actually.
Yeah. And if anyone turns into a prick.
Yeah, they're out.
There they go. Don't know why I looked at you, Matt. I reckon
if someone should turn into a prick.
I reckon if anyone was going to Matt, I reckon after 15 years, is there any tensions in the group? Do you think is there any?
No.
Is there? Can we create some? And you're doing Wonka, and so is there anything exciting like that coming up for you?
There might be some more. Here we go next year.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it's pretty good.
And so that would be it's great fun to shoot. It just shoots around the corner from me as well, which is fucking amazing. After years of, so I live in North London, and we often shoot sort of Wimbledon or Guildford, and so it's really lovely to wake up and, you know, get driven 5 minutes down the road. It's ridiculous. But it has to be done, insurance.
Yeah.
I'm a friend of Tom Basden. who wrote that show, and I'm just imagining him listening to this podcast and hearing you go, I'm so pleased to do the idea of doing more Here We Go because it's round the corner.
I saw him actually on Friday. He took us out for lunch, and that was the first question I asked him. So have we got that house?
Is it still going to be?
Are we going to be up in Trent Park?
Am I going to have to have a journey to work?
Yeah.
Don't write a thing in a big old house that you have to walk around in.
That's true. I quite like the journey. And that's something that, you know, should it ever end, I'll really miss being driven and chauffeured around. No, I'll just miss the, you know, the house and everything else and the grounds. Yeah. And yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Did Bamba Gascoigne own the house?
He did, yeah. Yeah.
Does his ghost now...
He passed when we were making the show, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But we didn't really see him an awful lot. But,
no, he didn't live in it. And stuff. It wasn't, yeah.
He inherited, didn't he?
He inherited it like in the show.
Wow.
Yeah, there's so many aspects we realised.
I don't think he was as surprised as Alison.
If the ghost of Bamba Gascoigne comes to you and says, can I be in the next series? But I have to play Bamba Gascoigne because I don't have the range to do anything else. Would you have him? Would you write a part for him?
Sorry. In this scenario, is Bamba Gascoigne a ghost?
He's a ghost.
In the house. And he wants to play himself as a ghost in the house.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, well, hang on. Richard Herring's already said he wants to audition. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I can do Bamba Gascoigne.
Sorry, Bamba. Richard. I mean...
It's just too meta. Yeah.
In the unlikely scenario...
Well, me and Bamba are going to go make our own fucking sitcom.
Yeah.
Well, and there's going to be swearing in it and sex in it.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Ghosts chucking stuff around.
Ghost nights.
They can touch things.
Yeah. Great.
You can have sex with them and it doesn't count as cheating.
Yeah.
Me and Bamba.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Everyone wants to see it. That's why you're fucking dead meat now, you guys. Yeah. I hope you don't die in an ironic way.
Cheers.
You too.
And, I hope there's not a curse. You know, like, there's a curse of Dad's Army. Have you noticed that all the Dad's Army casts, apart from me, Pike have
That's
died?
Just the over curse. Time people die, isn't it?
Curse of Last of the Summer Wine, all of the Last of the Summer Wine.
They're all old.
Last of the Summer Wine, they're all gone. Carry On, they've all gone.
Yeah.
I hope there's not a curse of the ghost. Is
I must confess,
coming.
I do worry that at some point we will die.
The joke's going to be on there. Yeah. I'm going to be laughing when that happens. Because
yeah. He's gone.
Right, guys, it's so fantastic to meet you. I am such a huge fan, and thank you very much. You're better than Richard E. Grant. Thanks so much for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Matt and Jim. Thank you very much. We're back next week. You can watch online. You have been listening to Rahulastapper with me, Richard Herring, and my guests, Matthew Bainton and Jim Howick. Thank you to Scant Regard, who are the musicians, or musician, I don't know, there might be more than one of them, who played this music. Thank you very much to my producer, Ben Walker, to whom I'm indebted, and also Chris Evans, not that one, or that one, for, I don't know what he does, but he's always around, like a bad smell. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having me. It doesn't smell here, and anyone who says it does is lying. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com, buy downloads and books, and sometimes you can get live versions of the show you watch on video. Go and have a look. It's quite good. GFSBoxOffice.com for those.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.